This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the greater Fairfax Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Herb Cohn, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Inver Solutions, and Susan Heppner from RAFA. We've got a great lineup of guests on you, for you on our show today, including David Piger, Chairman and CEO of First Virginia Community Bank, Bill Mutrin, Partner Holland & Knight, Ray Muslimani, Founder and CEO of GCE, and Cheryl Schwartz, Owner and CEO of the Blue Canopy. I'd like to introduce to you first David Piger, Chairman and CEO of First Virginia Community Bank. David, what is First Virginia Community Bank? What do you guys do?
We're a small community bank in Fairfax, Virginia. We're one of the youngest banks in the state of Virginia, just recently turned 3 years old, and we're a small commercial business bank.
How large or small is the bank in terms of the way you measure a bank and also in terms of the number of employees?
We have about 37 employees, mm-hmm. and our total asset size is approximately $215 million. Which means we've experienced some pretty significant growth over our three-year history.
How did you get a job with this bank?
Well, I'm actually one of the founders of the bank. I'm the founding chairman.
One of the founders of the bank. Have you ever been involved with the bank previously?
Absolutely. This is my second bank. I was a founding chairman and director of James Monroe Bank.
Of James Monroe Bank, you were involved. Let me ask you a question. David, if you wanted to retire financially, could you?
I absolutely could financially, but it's a part of my life now where I'm very passionate about what I do, and I'm lucky to be able to do what I do.
Wait a minute. How many hours a day and how many days a week are you working or thinking about business? Like, what time do you go into the office?
You can't count that high.
So you really
living and breathing this venture.
So you really enjoy what you're doing.
I'm very passionate about community banking.
Mm-hmm. How young were you when business got into your blood, and how did that happen?
Well, I didn't realize it until later, but I grew up in a banking family, and I think my passion for community banking came from my father. He was one of the youngest CEOs of a national bank in the country at age 35, and I grew up. My dad was primarily a lender, became the CEO, but I grew up talking about around the dinner table loans and business transactions.
How young were you when these conversations occurred?
I remember as young as 8, 9, 10, 11, those very formative years.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what did mom do to help you? What did you learn from your mom?
Well, I think I learned the value of family. I'm very blessed to have a large family, and she instilled upon us the work ethic and the recognition that family is the most important thing.
Now, I understand that, you know, if you wanted to financially retire, you could, then that you're really committed to this bank in terms of the number of hours and the thinking you put into it. How about your own family? How many children do you have? And are you happily married?
Absolutely. I've got five children, including three at home now, a 9, mm-hmm. a 6, and a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. My two youngest were adopted. Mm-hmm. I adopted a little girl from China, Lily, mm-hmm. and a little girl from Guatemala, Sarah.
Okay. I'm just trying to put my finger on who you really are. Tell me a little bit about your heritage. Tell me about...
I'm Polish heritage. All four of my grandparents came from Poland.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, David. You have used the word passion a number of times, and obviously that's a big part of who you are. What is it about community banking that has interested you? You're capable. You've done banking before. You could have a very large bank. What is it about community banking in particular that you find worth committing yourself to?
Community banks are the engine for growth in this country. New business and small business create more jobs than any other, and small community banks are the fuel that drive that engine. Growing up, I saw my father's passion for the loans that he made, the businesses that he worked with to help them grow and achieve their dreams. And it stuck with me all these years. I'm truly, I use that word repeatedly, very passionate about allowing our customers' dreams to come true.
Can you tell us a story about spending some time with your father?
Absolutely.
And how he passed the passion along to you?
He did. He did in a number of different ways. I remember a couple of stories. On weekends, it was not unusual for us to drive around, and my dad would point out a loan he would make or a loan that he didn't make, and why he liked the business model, why he was so keen on the management or the idea behind this business or that business. And another story he told me, which is kind of interesting, it stuck with me all these years, although at the time I don't think I recognized the importance of it. I was kind of a hothead growing up, very stubborn, my own worst enemy. And my father recognized that in me and said, David, if you're smart, you'll go out and develop your own business. You really aren't cut out to corporate life. And he said, you know, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, a successful entrepreneur, you have to associate with professionals that can assist you. He said, what you need is you need a good banker to help you grow your business. You need a good accountant, a good CPA to help you manage the internal controls. And you need a good lawyer. And if you have a good banker and a good accountant, you probably don't need the good lawyer. Of course, I went off to law school, and then 30 years later discovered he was right after all. If you have a good banker and a good accountant, you don't really need a good lawyer.
So why become a banker if you went to law school to become a lawyer?
In my practice of law, I started representing a lot of banks and bankers, and I was a merger and acquisition lawyer for 30 years and recognized that every transaction involved a bank. As a result of that, I got very close and started practicing law and representing many of the banks in our area, and it just seemed a natural progression.
These past several years, past few years, have been exceptionally difficult on.
They've been very challenging
on business owners. What has that experience been like for you? There have to have been instances where customers that you've worked with have really faced very, very difficult, challenging times.
Absolutely, we're in a difficult banking environment, a difficult environmental, economic environment right now. What you try to do as a banker and a trusted advisor is understand the business model of our clients and be there for them. Understand that sometimes businesses have hiccups and try to be as responsive to those business owners as you can, recognizing the fundamental need to run a safe and sound bank.
Do the personal relationships, is that a satisfying part of the work that you do? Is that something that you picked up from your father, his having long-time relationships with customers?
I remember growing up getting Christmas cards, my dad receiving Christmas cards from clients that he made the first loan to. Years and years later, he would still get Christmas cards from clients that he started in business. And often those cards would say, Stan, you believed in me when no one else did. Personal relationships is very key.
David, when it comes to your willingness to make a loan, if I hand you a set of numbers and they're wonderful numbers, is that what you need to say yes?
Not at all. That may be the beginning of the conversation, but not the end. And my dad taught me that it's easy, that there's a science and an art to making a loan. The science is the numbers. The art is sitting across the table from the man and making sure he's going to pay you back when things are difficult. It's easy to pay a bank back when things are easy. How hard will that customer of yours work when it's a little bit more than easy?
If you're sitting across from somebody and the numbers are good, but you don't necessarily have faith in the person, you're not going to make the loan.
Not at all.
All right. On the other hand, let's assume that you're sitting across from somebody and the numbers aren't that great, but you like the dude. Would you make the loan?
Perhaps. But more likely, we'll work with that borrower to educate them, guide them to the point where we can make the loan. We're very transparent in all our business, and if we can't make a loan or can't do a particular transaction, we'll tell our customers exactly why and what they can change to make the transaction doable.
In what way do you run your bank differently than your father ran his?
Banking is so different. My dad passed away last year, but before he died, we would comment about the regulatory and legislative challenges, compliance challenges. We have new sets of legislation. Regulation hasn't even been written yet. It's much more compliant-driven, much more scrutiny by our regulators than he ever experienced.
David, do you think Dad was surprised you turned out the way you turned out?
I know he was. For a couple of years before he passed away, my mom had two business cards in her purse. Stanley G. Pidger, Chairman, Lorraine National Bank. David W. Pidger, Chairman, James Monroe Bank, which is my former bank. And I know that meant a lot to him and to her.
How do you think he felt about your success?
I think he was very pleased, very pleased that I sort of followed in his footsteps after sort of getting as far away as I could from Lorain, Ohio for so many years.
Mm-hmm. How do you think he felt?
He was amazed. He was very proud. I remember when I had the idea to set up the first bank, James Monroe Bank, I called him. I said, Dad, you've been a banker for 40 years. Will you help me? He said, I don't know how to set up a bank. Who sets up a bank? I know how to run a bank, but I'd be glad to help you, but are you sure you know what you're getting into?
What did you learn from your grandparents?
Boy, work ethic.
What do you mean?
Both, all four of my grandparents came from Poland with nothing. My grandmother, my father's mother, worked at the United States Steel tool department, handing out tools in Lorain, Ohio. Used to be United States Steel, largest mm-hmm. seamless pipe mill in the world. Mm-hmm. I came over at age 16. I learned the value of hard work.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the website address for First Virginia Community Bank?
The website is fvcbank.com, fvcbank.com.
We've been speaking with David Pidger, the chairman and CEO of First Virginia Community Bank, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions, and Susan Hepner-Raffa. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Louis Riesco.
Louis, who are you with?
I'm with Lumark Technologies.
And what is Lumark Technologies?
Lumark Technologies is a management, consulting, and systems engineering firm, and we are a federal government contractor.
And you are unique in what way?
We actually have a specialized knowledge and an ability to work with quality standards for our clients in the normal course of professional delivery.
Tell us more. What makes that so special?
Sure. We live and breathe standards like ISO, CMMI. So, for example, any type of work that we deliver to the federal government client, our staff are actually very versed in those types of standards. Helps them manage, you know, higher delivery. You know, the end result, of course, is customer satisfaction. But we're able basically to improvise and make some innovation in our project delivery.
What type of companies do you work with, Lois?
We work with pretty much all size, small, mid, and large business.
Can you give us a success story, please?
Sure. We won a contract in 2007 for a federal government client. Morale was low on the employee side. Customer, frankly, was not happy with productivity. Again, coming in there with a strong standards knowledge and quality knowledge, we suggested basically putting a few things in place, all the way from changing the work process and then also trying to do some measurement programs. The good thing is after about a year of performance, we actually then found that we did increase productivity. We reduced the backlog of work. The customer was ecstatic, and here we are 4 years later and actually got a follow-on contract.
What's your website, Louis?
It's www.lumark.com.
And that was your business spotlight.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. We're back, and we'd like to introduce to you a gentleman by the name of Bill Mutrin. Bill is a partner with Holland & Knight. Bill, what is Holland & Knight? What do you guys do for a living?
Holland & Knight is a multinational law firm. We have about 1,000 lawyers. We're in about 17 or 18 locations, both nationally and internationally.
Wow, that's a large law firm. And you're a partner with Holland & Knight. What do you do that's special with this law firm?
I'm the leader of the Corporate and Mergers and Acquisitions Group, so I lead the lawyers that represent companies in mergers and acquisitions.
What is a merger acquisition? I'm not sure I understand what that stuff's all about.
Basically, there's been a wave of consolidation over the last 10 years where companies and private equity groups buy other companies as a means to grow, to enhance value, to get synergies. Big companies are divesting, small mm-hmm. companies are growing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of activity.
So a merger and acquisition are a merger or an acquisition is a way for a company to continue to grow. As opposed to growing organically, you acquire another kind of business to get into that line of business or grow your existing line of business. Is that right?
It's a supplement to organic growth. A lot of companies would like to grow 10 to 20% per year. The economy doesn't really support that, or their business doesn't support that, so they supplement it through mergers and acquisitions.
So it seems to me that considering all the personalities involved in a business, sometimes there's more than one owner, and there's also the employee group, and there's 1,001 different considerations. In order to acquire a business, I mean, there's 1,001 little details that need to be due diligence checked out. And then to make sure that the deal goes through, there's a lot of different things that can go wrong. Am I right about that, or am I misreading this?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Every transaction is like a novel. There's different casts of players. There's different interests. There's different goals and aspirations. And you have to balance all those with the economic and the legal terms and draw up hundreds of documents and balance all those interests. That's what makes it exciting.
Well, you know, in our conversation, I'm not questioning your legal abilities, but it just seems to me that you're bringing something special to the party, and my bet is that you're the master bridge. And my bet is that you just managed to keep the balls up in the air through the good times and through the difficult times in the negotiation. Am I mistaken about that?
No, I think that's what I try to do. Once the parties agree on the basic terms, they all want to get a deal done.
Uh-huh.
So there may be 20 or 30 obstacles, roadblocks. The deals die 1,000 deaths, and I don't get too excited by it. I've been around a while, so I know the solutions to these. So my goal is to convince people to be reasonable and find a way to solve the problem.
So there's something about your personality, though, that I believe is what really sets you apart. I mean, in terms of the merger and acquisition community, you're a legend in D.C. Tell me, how young were you when this bridging ability came about? How young were you when this characteristic began to show up of being able to keep all the balls together?
Ever since I can remember, probably high school, college. I was rush chairman of my fraternity in college. I bridged the same thing, multiple personalities and compromises and making people want to come to my fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
I presume that you come from a professional family. You seem to have had an easy path to professional success. Is that the case?
No, that is not the case. I came from the... A family where my father worked in a factory for General Electric for 44 years until he retired. My mother was a stay-at-home mother, and I'm the oldest of five.
So how do you explain your career trajectory into becoming a lawyer?
I had the opportunity to work at the same factory as my father for summer jobs when I went to college. That was enough to teach me that's not a life I wanted to have.
What was it like?
He made large steam turbines and generators for General Electric. He was every day on the floor, hot, sweaty, difficult, a little bit repetitious. And I know it was a life that he wanted all of us to aspire not to have.
Did you work during your college and law school years?
I worked since my paper out in fifth grade. So, yes, constantly. I even put myself through law school. I went part-time at night, five nights a week for 4 years while I worked full-time.
You had mentioned in the green room that you have clients now that were at one time adversaries.
Yes.
Are you serious?
I am very serious.
Tell us about that.
Well, a lot of times you have, I'm representing the seller of a company and the buyer comes in. It's a very difficult transaction, a lot of obstacles. We overcome them. They watch how you work, and then the next time around, they say, well, we'd like you on our side. So I probably have 10 clients that were on the other side of transactions with me. And that's a good way to market.
Bill, I understand the effect of that on you. Tell us about your grandparents, and tell us about your mom.
Grandparents were immigrants here from Poland. They came over through Ellis Island, 1890s, and... early 1900s. They knew broken English. One worked in a locomotive plant, American Locomotive Works in Schenectady, New York. And my mother came from that family. Her father had a grocery store. So they were products of the Depression, lived very frugally, and had a strong work.
So what was the effect of the grocery store on your mother? Did your mother work there?
She did work there.
From how young did she work there?
Since she was about 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. What was the effect of your mother on you?
Well, she's still alive. It's still a great effect. She is the most kind and forgiving person I've ever met.
Is Mom surprised you've turned out this way?
Maybe. I think so.
Mm-hmm. How do you think she feels about your success?
She's very pleased.
Why?
It reflects on her. It reflects on... she thinks I earned it.
Mm-hmm.
She knows I work hard.
If you wanted to financially retire, could you?
Yes, I could.
why don't you?
Several reasons. One, I love the intellectual stimulation of this business. Every deal is an adventure, new problems to solve. Second, I love the relationships with clients and other people I work with, and I don't want to give that up.
Do you have your own family?
I do.
And tell us about your children. How did your childhood influence your style of parenting and how you're able to encourage your children to reach their own ambitions?
Very similar. I have two children, a daughter and a son, and I always taught them that life is not fair and you need to work, and work conquers most things. So they both work hard.
Anybody succumb to the appeal of the law?
Neither. They both said, well, I want to be home at night and have dinner with my family when I'm your age. I said, that's overrated. Don't
Bill, you don't sound like the stereotype of a lawyer. How does your unique qualities play well in the legal arena?
I think the qualities that I bring are, one, I am very thorough in my analysis, and I'm very quick to analyze and come up with creative compromises and solutions. And then I don't force myself, I'm not a table pounder, but I quietly but firmly, you know, draw the people to the right place that's in everybody's interest.
You had mentioned, and I will quote you, an undying commitment to your clients. Tell us about undying commitment.
Undying commitment means you have the conference calls Sunday morning, you have the documents done at 1 a.m., whatever's necessary. There's never a weekend or a vacation that goes by when I don't do some work and be responsive to clients. The whole name of the game is being responsive. And clients don't want things tomorrow or 2 days from now. They want them today.
How do you perceive young lawyers coming into your firm today? Do you think that generationally there's the same commitment to client service and understanding what it takes to be successful?
When young lawyers first start with us, they do not have that same value or commitment. And it takes about 4 or 5 years for them either to get it or realize it's the wrong profession for them.
What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of building, I've built an incredibly good team of lawyers in this region. And I think I have a lot of young lawyers with me that are now generating their own clients, doing their own work, and we have just a very strong team and organization that's just well known for what we do.
Is there more opportunity tomorrow, or was there more opportunity yesterday? There was more opportunity yesterday, right?
I think there's just as much opportunity tomorrow.
You really think so?
I absolutely mean,
you hear about
do.
The world's coming to an end and the economy's collapsing and all this other stuff. You're telling me that there's a lot of opportunity coming into tomorrow?
Comparing to 2010 to 2009, there's just so much more money and activity in the marketplace. Firms need to grow. The only way they can grow today is through mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. It can add value or it can subtract value. So those acquisitions that can add value and facilitate growth are going to be in high demand.
Mm-hmm. What is the website address for Holland & Knight?
It's www.hklaw.com.
www.hklaw.com.
Correct.
We've been speaking with Bill Mutrin, partner at Holland & Knight here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Home Solutions, and Susan Heppner, Rafa. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is?
Arlen Feldman.
Arlen, who are you with?
I am the marketing manager of Washington Management Group and Fed Sources.
Two companies. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Washington Management Group provides GSA schedule consulting, and they are the parent company to Fed Sources, which is the leading market intelligence service provider.
Well, what is market intelligence services?
If you need to buy or sell to the federal government, we can help you do that. We help you succeed in the federal government.
Well, why is that important work that you do?
You know, it's very important in this industry because, obviously, with constricting budgets and people needing to use their time and energy effectively, we can help them provide that kind of service when they need to know more information about the specific opportunity or where they should, approach the government next. We can help them with that sort of intelligence and insight in the industry.
Now, why are you better than anybody else at doing this?
You know, we like to say that our service is really what makes us different. We provide a service to our clients, and they know they can call us with whatever questions they might have. We don't just give them a login to a database and say, okay, you're on your own. You know, we really have their back, and we really help them decide and help make these tough decisions and really help them grow and really tailor where they need to go with some of their time.
You in particular, Arlen, what do you love most about doing this?
You know, I love the company. I love being able to say that I work for an honest corporation. You know, I really admire some of the senior managers that I work with. I think they have a fabulous story in the government industry, and I like to know that I'm working with a great group of people that are helping a variety of people in this industry succeed.
In just a few words, what's a great company for you to work with?
We have a lot of partners, the Coalition for Government Procurement. They're a wonderful organization. You should check them out, too.
And give us your website, please, Arlen.
All right. WashMG and FedSources.com.
Thank you very much. That was your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, my co-host, Susan Heppner, Rafa, and Dennis McFarlane from Infinitiv. And we'd like to introduce Ray Muslimani. Ray is the founder and CEO of an organization known as GCE. What is this GCE?
Well, Herb, GCE is a federal provider for financial management services.
Uh-huh. Tell me a little bit more about what you actually do.
Yeah, we provide the financial management solutions that federal agencies use to manage their money. Mm-hmm. And so we think we're a great force in helping agencies figure out how much money they have, where their money is going.
Hmm. Interesting. You have a bit of an accent. Where's the accent from?
Well, I came from Israel here in 1981, right out of high school.
How old were you?
I was about 19.
You were 19 years old, mm-hmm. and when you came to the United States, you knew what you were going to do?
No.
Didn't know what you were going to do.
No, that was the hardest challenge kind of coming over here. You kind of knew that you have a lot of opportunity here if you work really hard at achieving your dreams. Chances are that you will accomplish what you're trying to do. But what it is I needed to accomplish is it took me a while to figure that out.
Uh-huh. How old are you now?
I am 48. I'm
You're
maybe 48. 15 in a couple of years.
So there's this firm. What kind of revenue are you guys doing?
I say in the 20 to 25 million range.
$20 to $25 million. Mm-hmm. How many employees do you have?
About 100
employees.
Yeah.
So you came to Israel at 19. This is 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
To start this business, you didn't know what you were going to do, but you managed to build a business
mm-hmm.
that's now 100 employees, $20-25 million. Uh-huh. Well, how young were you when you realized you were going to do whatever it took?
I'd say I was in middle school to high school where you begin to figure out a characteristic about yourself that I'm the kind of person that will get obsessed with accomplishing a goal, whether it's is doing your work at school or whether helping my family with family business. You notice this about yourself that I'm the kind of person that almost would stop at nothing to kind of do finish what I'm doing and do a good job at it.
So you really want a sense of closure. You like a sense of closure. You like getting to the result.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason I know this is earlier I was speaking with you and I asked you, you know, it must have been pretty difficult coming from Israel, which is another world, another country, another society, to the United States. You said, no, it was no problem. And you kept on talking. It was like, wow, this guy goes through walls. It's like pretty evident, you know. So tell me, the business, how did you end up with the idea to start this specific business?
Well, I worked, after I put myself through college, I worked for a large IT provider in the D.C. area. And I worked, that was the only job that I ever had. I worked for that company for 10 years. And towards like the last several years, I begin to notice in myself that I think I can help my customers better, that the customer focus wasn't really there. The way that people took care of their own employees wasn't quite what I would have done. And so sort of I thought that I think I can put myself in a position to help people better if I went out, you know, on my own, that I'll be in a better position since I'll be the guy running the show. I'll be able to make better decisions to hopefully help people in a way that I thought people should be helped.
Susan? You have a certain intensity to get things done and to be masterful at it. What do you think it was about your childhood that gave you the confidence to leave Israel, come to the United States? You mentioned that you came with a younger sibling. That's a pretty brave thing to do when you're 19 years old. What do you think enabled you to be able to be successful from that original journey here till now?
I tell you, I was since I was like 6 or 7 years old, I always dreamed about coming to this country. I come from a family of 10 brothers and 2 sisters, so the oldest one is like say 20 years older than me, and he had come here to the States, you know, to study. And so he came here in 1970, and ever since then, about age of 8, 9, you always imagine that I'm gonna go there. You know, that the land of opportunity is there, and so this is the land where. Where you can go and you can achieve your dreams. So I would say at a pretty young age, you have this vision that you're gonna arrive in this place where hopefully good things will happen to you if you work at it.
What did your parents do for a living?
Fishing.
Did you help?
I can take a lot of credit for helping. I was they really established the business. My older brothers did, but yes, I did what I could.
So they were entrepreneurs as well.
Yes.
And how young were you? Were you working with your parents for your parents?
I would say maybe 10, 12, you know, something like that.
Didn't it bother you? Your friends are out playing and you're working.
No, it seemed like the thing to do. It seemed I don't know why, but it seemed that, helping your family.
You got paid a competitive wage. They paid you what everybody else got paid, right?
No.
Didn't that bother you? I mean, you know, you're working in the family business, your friends are out playing, and you're not getting paid with everybody else. Didn't that bother you?
It's really interesting. No, actually, it never did. Helping your family, helping things get done, it seemed like the natural thing to do.
How's that characteristics played through in your adult life, this family thing that you got going on? How's that played through in your adult life?
I think it's the desire. I really think the connection I can make is the desire to help others, is the desire to make sure that whenever people around you are trying to achieve something. I think I can relate that to my customers. My customers trying to achieve a big-ticket item, like pass a big-ticket, like audits in the federal government. And I have a role to play, and they're going, I'm going to do what I can to help. So it's sort of a... You know, a lot of times, you know, people ask, do you do it for the money and all that? And I say, well, of course, you know, the money is nice, but that's not what makes you wake up in the morning and get to the office and say, what do we need to do to help our customers today?
If I was talking to your employees, what would they tell me it's like working in the company, working in GCE?
I think it's the customer focus. And I think it's working hard to really do a good job. We pride ourselves on our sense of innovation. Comes from the perspective that we need to offer our customers a superior product.
Do you ever have an employee that comes to you with a personal problem and you help them out?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, that's the other thing that I really enjoy. I enjoy mentoring people. The sense of I think this. Probably one of the biggest sense of satisfaction I get is the is seeing young people grow. Like some of the people that work for me,
are your mom and dad still around?
My mom is.
Your mom is.
And my dad passed away in 1973 or so.
If your dad was around nowadays, how do you think he'd if your dad was around now, how do you think he'd feel about your success?
You know, I hope that he'll be proud.
Why do you think he'd be proud?
You know that that his son achieved, that his son is helping people, which I think is the thing that makes me proud in my own kids, is the sense that they're growing to be.
You think he'd be surprised?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. He'd be surprised.
How about mom? What did mom do for you?
Mom gives me a sense of grounding. When you go over to mom's house, you know, you're talking to your mom, and so sort of all the other things around you, you know, kind of take a back seat. And it's
Susan.
I'm very curious. How do you view the American dream today? What would you say to a young immigrant today?
I say,
translate your experience.
I say, without a doubt, this is the land of opportunity. I really believe it in my gut. You really only have to grow up in a different country and to come here to see that this is it. This is what dreams are made of. With the one thing, you have to be able to work at it. If you work at it, chances are you will achieve whatever it is, big or small. But this is in my head, this is the land of opportunity. And you couple that with the freedom that we have in this country, and just an amazing place to be.
So you haven't been disappointed by the dream?
In my case, no.
Is the dream still alive?
Yes.
For new immigrants?
Yes, yes. Yes, I mean, I see, you know, in myself that if you keep at it, good things will happen to you.
Brothers and sisters, are they surprised you turned out this way?
I don't know if they're surprised, but they're... But some of them seems to be proud that that good things are happening to me.
Any brothers or sisters working with you in the business?
No.
Go ahead. Are any of the other brothers and sisters entrepreneurs?
The younger brother that I have, who lives down in Florida, is, you know, he owns a construction business. The oldest one was. I would say, as a general statement, probably yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Between 1973, when your father passed away, and 1981, when you immigrated, how was the fishing business still going on? How did your family?
Well, my dad had sold the fishing business. I'd say like in the mid 70s, things changed.
With that
in
point.
A good positive way.
I mean, things changed, you know, and for me, it was something that cemented in my head that I need to kind of, I suppose now you kind of think about it now, I've not really thought about it a great deal, but maybe that force in my head that changed, that I need to part with the old, and I need to figure out what to do with my life now that the old thing is gone.
Ray, what is the website address of GCE?
www.gcefederal.com.
And how do you pronounce your last name?
Muslimani.
We've been speaking with Ray Muslimani, the founder and CEO of GC here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host, Ms. Susan Heppner from RAFA and Dennis McFarland from Infinitiv. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And we'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is...
Louis Riesco.
Louis, who are you with?
I'm with Lumark Technologies.
And what is Lumark Technologies?
Lumark Technologies is a management, consulting, and systems engineering firm, and we are a federal government contractor.
And you are unique in what way?
We actually have a specialized knowledge and an ability to work with quality standards for our clients in the normal course of professional delivery.
Tell us more. What makes that so special?
Sure. We live and breathe standards like ISO, CMMI. So, for example, any type of work that we deliver to the federal government client, our staff are actually very versed in those types of standards. Helps them manage, you know, higher delivery. You know, the end result, of course, is customer satisfaction. But we're able basically to improvise and make some innovation in our project delivery.
What type of companies do you work with, Lois?
We work with pretty much all size, small, mid, and large business.
Okay. Can you give us a success story, please?
Sure. We won a contract in 2007 for a federal government client. Morale was low on the employee side. Customer, frankly, was not happy with productivity. Again, coming in there with a strong standards knowledge and quality knowledge, we suggested basically putting a few things in place, all the way from changing the work process and then also trying to do some measurement programs. The good thing is after about a year of performance, we actually then found that we did increase productivity. We reduced the backlog of work. The customer was ecstatic, and here we are 4 years later and actually got a follow-on contract.
What's your website, Lewis?
It's www.lumark.com.
And that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Susan Heppner. Rafa and Dennis McFarlane, Infinitive, would like to introduce to you Cheryl Schwartz. Cheryl is the owner and COO of an organization known as the Blue Canopy. Cheryl, what is the Blue Canopy? What do you folks do?
We're a women-owned small business, which is an information technology service provider. We provide business and technology solutions to support critical mission-relevant initiatives and cybersecurity initiatives for national security agencies.
How large or small is the business?
A little under 200 people.
A little bit under 200 people. And how did you get a job with this company?
Oh, I don't have a job. I'm the owner.
You started the business.
Yes.
Well, where are you from originally?
Actually, I'm from this area, born and raised, Washington, D.C. area.
How many brothers and sisters?
We have one older brother.
Uh-huh. And I guess mom and dad were in business, because in order for you to be involved with starting a business, which is now 200 people, I mean, that's pretty substantial. Where'd the business stuff come from?
Well, my father was an orthodontist. He started his own business as an orthodontist and really went off on his own, was an entrepreneur.
So your dad was an orthodontist and then went off and started as an entrepreneur. How about grandparents and other kinds of influence that may have stuck stuff in your blood that, like, caused you to do this?
Well, my parents are first-generation Americans. My grandparents immigrated here from Poland. And a hardworking family. I spent a lot of time with them and really drove my father to become an entrepreneur, and it must have rubbed off on me.
What do you mean your grandparents? Tell us about the effect of your grandparents on you.
They came here as an immigrant from Poland under some adverse conditions, obviously.
What year was this?
In the 20s.
1920s, uh-huh. From Poland.
Yes.
So there's some prosecution going on there.
Yes, yes.
And they came to the United States. And what do you remember about your grandparents, and how did that affect you?
They were very driven to support the family and also support the family from a financial perspective, from a health perspective, and just sort of instilling a lot of family values in our business, you know, in our family.
Susan?
You describe a fairly traditional childhood in the sense that your dad was a professional, your mom was at home. What in the family home inspired you as a young woman to pursue a business career? And did you grow up thinking that you'd be a government contractor when you were a little bit older, or did you have any different routes that you took on your way here?
Actually, I did grow up in a very traditional family, interestingly enough. And I think that because of that traditional, I think I was always looking for ways to kind of set myself apart as a woman, especially. I sort of went down first in expressing myself around theater and music. Sort of found my need. I feel happy when I'm satisfying other people, when I'm contributing, when I'm serving others, when I'm serving the community. And I think that I sort of found that confidence in the theater and the music to really drive that.
How do you leverage that experience in music and theater in business today?
Oh, I think that music brings a lot to a person. I think that it brings the structure, and it brings the creativity and beauty, which is really the art and science of running a business.
Do you ever find yourself, when you're doing a proposal for a government agency, there's any similarities to being on stage?
Sure, you're telling a story. You got to tell a story and convince everybody, you know, of why you think you can really support them and help them achieve their goals and make them feel good. I mean, that's what it's about.
What personality trait would you describe as being the most helpful in terms of leadership qualities in founding and running your company?
I think perseverance, having a desire to serve others and to serve your community and seeing other people succeed. I mean, I think having the passion around seeing our employees achieve great goals and to be able to run their own businesses one day, which is why we have a small business. And then further, really having our clients achieve their goals is just a really exciting feeling.
Oh, wait a minute. When I introduced you earlier, it was Cheryl Schwartz, owner and COO, the Blue Canopy. If you're the owner, how come you're not the owner and CEO?
Because I know what I'm good at.
Wait a minute. I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm actually very good at running the business in day-to-day. And the CEO, Brad Schwartz, actually, is the visionary. He's an Air Force pilot. He is the visionary. He's the cutting-edge one. I'm more grounded because of my traditional roots, but have that creative bent. So I think that the combination of understanding how we complement our skill sets is great.
Is it just a coincidence that both of your last names are Schwartz?
No, he is my husband.
And were you guys husband and wife prior to the start of the business?
Yes, and we decided to go down this route because we have three girls, especially me. I was very passionate about really teaching our girls to be women owners and women entrepreneurs in their life and to be a role model so that they could see a woman being successful.
How old were the girls when you decided to play entrepreneur?
6, 8, and 10.
6, 8, and 10. And did you start the business and then your husband joined you, or how did that all happen?
No, we went at it together as a family, and actually the girls also own a piece of the business as well.
Oh, anyway, this is interesting. So the girls are 6, 8, and 10.
Uh-huh.
And you and your husband quit your jobs to start a business. Didn't it ever occur to you that that's a risky thing to do when you may be putting their futures in jeopardy?
Yeah, well, what we actually did is we bought a platform company, which helped, that was small, that sort of helped us build on sort of our desire, again, to help other people succeed, to help serve our community, to help people become managers and business owners of their own, and to teach our children. So it's sort of become something in our family around the cultures and values to teach our children. You know, I also ran the community services committee at my kids' school for 8 years, and real passionate, again, about leading the community. And I just wanted to show our kids that there's ways that they can become leaders, and it was very important to us.
What do you mean there's ways that these kids can become leaders? I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think as a woman, to find herself, to find ways that she can contribute and be who she is. I started a very traditional career, actually. My desire to please others, please my parents, and sort of go down that path. I actually got a degree in accounting and went to KPMG, but I think my creative side just sort of kept driving me towards wanting to support clients. I actually ended up moving into consulting and became a partner in consulting at KPMG.
How has your relationship with your husband changed now that you're business partners?
I don't think it's changed. It's gotten stronger.
How so?
Well, I think that we've always worked together at some level. I think that we're very collaborative in nature. We complement each other very, very much so. And I think that understanding and being able to build that set of common values and cultures around serving others, serving our clients, teaching our children how to treat others, and in terms of how you build a business and get other people excited about being part of a business.
You've mentioned service and community several times, which is always wonderful to hear. Is that the sort of culture that your parents created a family around? Were your parents involved in the community? Did they participate in different service organizations?
Yes, they've always been very supportive. In fact, my father's 80 years old, and he still has a service volunteer at 5 different places every week. So it's great.
You think Mom and Dad are surprised you've turned out this way?
Absolutely. No question.
What do you mean?
Well, I think that growing up in a traditional home, I think that I must have had something to prove, for sure. My brother was the guy in the family. Again, traditional values. Having said that, my father motivated me to do well in school because I wanted to be noticed. Again, maybe the music and theater. But he was very loving and nurturing. My mother was the one who really said, you know what, Cheryl, you need to be independent. You need to be on your own. We're moving into a new era, and that's what's important. So I think the combination of the both of them sort of drove me to sort of finding my way and ending down this path. In fact, my parents often say, I thought she was going to end up on Broadway. Oh, my gosh.
Is there any similarity between growing a business and growing a family?
Absolutely.
Is there really?
Absolutely.
Like,
for us.
Like, tell me about that.
Well, I think that it may be the way that we're trying to build this business. I think that, again, we think we have a unique paradigm in our company and a unique vision around creating an enduring company that actually is collectively desire and passion is to see other people succeed and our clients succeed. and helping our people get close to the business and manage the business and become owners themselves. So there's a career path to allow them to do that. So
why is that so important to you?
Because I think that power is helping others. I think that seeing other people to be able to get financial stability, to grow their families, and to be able to manage their own business and have their own
freedom. And how's that similar to being a mom?
Well, as a mom, I think the values and cultures around serving others and how to treat others and how to treat people, I mean, they hear about how we treat our employees, how we treat our clients, our passion for serving others and our clients sort of drives to our kids to say it's important to work hard, to be respectful of people.
Have the girls been to the office?
Yes.
How do they feel when they walk in the door?
I think they feel good.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I think they smile. They're supportive of people. It's actually kind of funny. At nighttime, sometimes I'll be sending an email.
No, it's mommy and daddy's business. Don't they run around and create havoc and ask everybody for candy? And
no. No, absolutely not. They actually sort of have a sense of responsibility, I think, in terms of... But their sense of
responsibility... They're entitled.
No, it's not entitlement. No, it's not entitlement. It's around being kind to others and being respectful to others and being interested in what they have to say and what they're doing.
How'd that happen?
I think, again, it's around the culture that we're trying to build in our company and the values that we have built in our family and in the business.
What's the... earlier we were speaking and we were broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce and... Somebody mentioned to me earlier that you had won a number of awards. Is that true?
Yeah, actually, we've just been honored and privileged to be recognized by the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce as the Government Contractor of the Year.
Why?
To recognize companies whose contribution to the community and to the government and to the people, that's outstanding. And I was really honored and blessed. It's a very humbling.
Have you won any other awards?
We did. We've won two Inc. 500 awards and also Washington Technology Fest.
Why is the company called the Blue Canopy?
Oh, blue. Blue canopy. Blue is for the horizons, the clouds in the sky, really guiding our clients to an unparalleled vision. Canopy is around giving them a soft landing. Blue is a color of trust. Orange is the color of change. Mm-hmm. My husband is an Air Force pilot, so that probably influenced it as well.
What is the website address for the Blue Canopy?
BlueCanopy.com.
We've been speaking with Cheryl Schwartz, owner and CEO of the Blue Canopy here on Executive Leaders. And I'd like to thank my co-hosts today, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions, Susan Hefner-Rafa, and Denham McFarland from Infinitive for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We do thank you for joining us, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.